What is the very tools your vet uses to tell you your cat's heart is perfectly healthy are actually missing a silent killer like 80% of the time?
Yeah, it's a pretty terrifying thought.
It really is. Today, we are basically dismantling everything you thought you knew about your pet's heart.
Completely tearing up the rule book.
Exactly. We're looking at this diagnostic illusion that is just so convincing. I mean, it's fooling stethoscopes, it's tricking x-rays, and it's hiding in plain sight inside these vibrant, young, seemingly invincible animals.
Right, the ones you'd never suspect.
So welcome in. If you're joining us, just prepare to see veterinary medicine in a completely new light.
Definitely.
We are pulling apart this massive, just paradigm-shifting study published this week. So April 2026 in the Australian Journal of Agricultural, Veterinary, and Animal Sciences.
It's a mouthful, but a very important paper.
Yeah, totally. The research was conducted at the Procure Veterinary Hospital in Vietnam. And it basically zeroes in on something called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, or, you know, HCM.
Which happens to be the most common acquired structural heart disease in cats.
Wow. The most common.
Yep. And the data emerging from this ProCare study, I mean, it doesn't just tweak our understanding of HCM. It completely rewrites how we screen for it.
That's wild.
It is. It forces us to confront this really uncomfortable reality that relying on traditional clinical signs, the things we have always trusted, is actually a highly effective way to let an animal slip into irreversible heart failure.
Jeez. So whether you have a cat curled up on your sofa right now or, you know, you just love a fascinating medical mystery, this deep dive is going to completely flip the script.
Oh, absolutely.
We are tearing down the whole old age myth and revealing why the classic warning signs you've been taught to look out for are, well, actually terrible early indicators.
They really are.
Okay, let's unpack this. Before we get into how veterinarians are trying to catch this ghost of a disease, we need to look at the demographic data.
Right, who's actually getting sick?
Because the sheer numbers from ProCare immediately shatter all our preconceptions.
Well, the sample size alone gives the study immense weight. I mean, between December 2024 and December 2025, the clinic examined like 2,195 cats.
That is a massive number of routine visits.
It is. And out of all those checkups, 167 cats were flagged for suspected heart disease based on various signs.
Okay.
But after rigorous specialized screening, only 30 cats were definitively diagnosed with HCM.
Wait, 30 out of over 2,000?
Just 30.
On the surface, I mean, that sounds like a really rare occurrence.
It does sound that way, yeah.
But when it hits, the structural devastation is just profound. The paper defines HCM as this abnormal inward thickening of the left ventricular myocardium.
Right, the heart muscle.
Specifically, it heavily targets the interventricular septum, which is the muscular wall separating the chambers.
Hmm.
And when I was reading this, trying to visualize it, it immediately made me think of a bodybuilder.
Oh, interesting. In what sense?
Well, imagine a massive bodybuilder whose chest muscles are growing at an exponential rate. But instead of growing outward and looking huge,
they're growing inward.
Exactly. The muscles are growing inward. They are taking up the actual empty space inside the rib cage, shrinking the cavity to the point where the lungs literally have no physical room left to expand and take in air.
That is a phenomenal way to visualize the pathology.
Right, because that is essentially what is happening to the left ventricle of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
The walls become so intensely muscular on the inside that there's just no empty chamber left to hold the blood.
Exactly. The heart muscle hypertrophies, it bulks up inwardly. And this brings us to a really crucial physiological concept, diastole.
Diastole. Okay, break that down for us.
So diastole is the resting mass of the heartbeat. It's the split second when the heart muscle is supposed to relax, stretch out like a flexible balloon, and let a fresh wave of blood pour into the chamber.
Okay, that makes sense.
But in HCM, because of that bodybuilder muscle growth you described, the heart loses its ventricular compliance.
Meaning it gets stiff.
Exactly. It becomes stiff, rigid, and unyielding. It simply cannot stretch to fill with blood properly.
Wow. And here's a demographic data point that completely stopped me in my tracks.
The age data.
Yes. When we think of heart disease, whether we are talking about humans or animals, we intuitively associate it with old age.
A lifetime of wear and tear.
Right. General wear and tear, failing parts. But the study showed that 83.33% of the cats definitively diagnosed were under 6 years old.
It's staggering.
Over 80%.
Mm.
If the vast majority of these cats haven't even reached middle age, doesn't that completely change how you should look at your young, hyperactive pet?
What's fascinating here is that it redefines our entire timeline of vigilance. I mean, HCM is not a disease of wear and tear.
It's not.
No, it's primarily a structural genetic miscoding. The actual blueprints for the heart muscle are fundamentally flawed from birth.
Wow, so they're just born with a ticking clock?
Pretty much. The study confirms that the average age of clinical onset ranges from just 2 to 7 years.
That's so young.
Right. So looking at a vibrant 3-year-old cat chasing a laser pointer around your living room and assuming their heart is invincible because of their youth, that's a very dangerous assumption.
And the breed data really reinforces that genetic component, too. I mean, British Shorthairs absolutely dominated the cases.
They did.
They made up 66.66% of all the HCM diagnoses at the hospital.
A huge majority.
Meanwhile, breeds that the internet generally considers notoriously bad for heart issues, like Maine Coons and Bengals.
Right.
They only accounted for about 6.5% each in this specific study.
Well, while regional breed popularity in Vietnam certainly influences those percentages, the genetic predisposition of the British Shorthair to develop this exact left ventricular hypertrophy is profound.
It really is.
They were detected in every single stage of the disease progression, from the earliest totally silent preclinical phases right up to terminal congestive heart failure.
Which just highlights how heavy that genetic burden is.
Exactly. But it wasn't just the expensive purebreds.
No, that really surprised me. Mixed breed cats made up 20% of the cases.
Right.
I feel like there's this deeply entrenched belief that mixed breed animals, your classic domestic short hair rescues, possess this impenetrable hybrid vigor that shields them.
Yeah, that is a very pervasive and honestly risky misconception.
Really?
Absolutely. I mean, genetic diversity is generally a massive benefit to an animal's immune system, sure.
Right.
But it doesn't wipe the slate clean. A mixed breed cat can easily inherit dominant traits from a high-risk ancestor.
Oh, like if they have a purebred somewhere in their lineage.
Exactly. If a standard shelter rescue has a British Shorthair or Scottish Fold somewhere a few generations back, it can absolutely inherit that flawed genetic blueprint for the heart muscle.
That 20% statistic is a stark reminder that no cat is totally off the hook just because they don't have pedigree papers.
Precisely. And interestingly, the study also found that sex wasn't a protective factor either. The cases were a nearly even split, roughly 47% male and 53% female.
Okay, so if the demographics are that unpredictable and the stethoscope is missing the problem 80% of the time.
Which is a terrifying statistic on its own.
Right. I mean, if I hear that, I would immediately demand an x-ray. You can literally take a picture and see the heart inside the chest.
You'd think so.
But the data here tells me that is a massive trap, too.
It is a huge trap because of what the x-ray is actually measuring versus what the disease is actually doing.
Okay, explain that.
So the researchers compared standard thoracic radiography, which are your basic chest x-rays, against echocardiography, which is a specialized ultrasound of the heart in motion.
And here's where it gets really interesting. When they looked at the x-rays, the vets measured something called the vertebral heart score, or the VHS.
Yes.
I was looking at this scoring system and it just blew my mind. They are basically measuring the shadow-like, the overall external silhouette of the heart on the x-ray.
Right, and comparing its size to the cat's spine to see if it's enlarged.
That's the standard procedure.
It is. It gives clinicians a reproducible number to determine if the heart is taking up too much physical space within the chest cavity. For a healthy cat, a normal VHS falls between 6.9 and 8.1.
So a perfectly normal heart tops out at an 8.1 score.
Hmm.
But the data shows that in stage B1 of the disease, which is the early preclinical stage where that internal muscle is already dangerously thickening,
the score barely moves.
Exactly. The average score was 8.06. A cat with a thickening, diseased heart still passes the x-ray test with flying colors.
It's completely hidden.
It isn't until the disease hits stage C, which is full-blown critical congestive heart failure, that the score finally jumps to a clearly abnormal 9.83.
Way too late.
Right. Relying on an x-ray for early HCM is literally like taking a photograph of the outside of a brick house to figure out if the interior walls are too thick.
That's a great analogy.
You aren't going to notice a single problem from the outside until the internal pressure gets so catastrophic that the exterior walls actually start visibly bulging out into the front yard.
Yeah, and if we connect this to the bigger picture, your house analogy maps perfectly onto the physiological progression of the disease.
How so?
Well, remember the sequence of events. First, the ventricular walls thicken inward. The overall external shape and size of the heart haven't changed much yet.
Which is why the x-ray misses it entirely.
Precisely. But because the inside chamber is getting smaller and stiffer, the pressure of the incoming blood begins to spike.
Because the blood is trying to get into a room that is shrinking.
Right.
So the pressure has to go somewhere.
Exactly. This introduces hemodynamics, the actual fluid dynamics and physical pressures within the cardiovascular plumbing system.
Okay.
Because the stiff lower ventricle can't accept the normal volume of blood, that blood backs up. And the intense pressure is transferred directly to the chamber sitting right above it, the left atrium.
Oh, wow.
Over time, that constant high-pressure backlog stretches the thin walls of the left atrium, causing it to balloon outward.
And that ballooning is what you finally see on the x-ray.
Yes. That physical ballooning of the upper chamber is when the overall silhouette finally enlarges enough to cast a bigger shadow. But the tragic reality is, by the time you see that, the animal is almost certainly already in heart failure.
Which brings us to the absolute gold standard, the echocardiogram, the ultrasound.
The only way to really see it.
Because unlike the x-ray casting shadows, the ultrasound actually lets you see through the exterior walls and measure the thickness of the rooms inside in real time.
Right. It's revelatory because it measures the internal structural changes directly. The researchers focus heavily on two critical measurements here.
Let's hear them.
First, the interventricular septal thickness in diastole, or IVSD. This directly measures how thick that internal muscle wall gets during the resting phase.
And the study showed a huge increase in that thickness across the stages, right?
A highly significant, undeniable increase at every single progressive stage. And second, perhaps more importantly for predicting heart failure, it measures the left atrium to aorta ratio, known as the LAAO.
This ratio feels like the ultimate ticking clock for the disease.
It really is.
I mean, a normal ratio is considered to be under 1.5. But by the time these cats hit stage C in the study, their ratio had skyrocketed to 2.55.
Yeah, that left atrium isn't just ballooning. Structurally, it is practically exploding from the backed up pressure.
It's just insane.
When that ratio breaches 2.0 and climbs toward 2.55, the hemodynamics have completely failed. The pressure inside the heart is so immense that fluid is literally being forced out of the blood vessels and weeping into the cat's lungs.
So what does this all mean for you as a listener?
Well, it comes down to timing.
Exactly. If your young cat has no murmur, looks fine on an x-ray, and is, you know, currently tearing up a scratching post, why go through the emotional trouble and the expense of booking a specialized heart ultrasound?
The treatment data gives a very clear answer.
Because looking at the final outcomes from ProCare, timing literally dictates survival. The numbers here are incredibly stark.
The outcome data might be the most compelling argument for proactive screening I've ever seen. To really grasp the gravity, we have to look at the ACVIM staging system used in the study.
Let's break those stages down so we know what the stakes actually are.
Sure. So group A consists of cats that are structurally normal but at high genetic risk, like a young British Shorthair with a clear ultrasound.
Okay.
Groups B1 and B2 represent the preclinical phases. The cat looks and acts totally fine, but the structural inward thickening is actively happening inside the heart.
So they're secretly getting worse.
Right. B1 is mild thickening. B2 is moderate to severe thickening, where the left atrium is just starting to stretch.
And then stage C.
Group C is congestive heart failure. The lungs are actively filling with fluid. And group D is end-stage refractory disease that no longer even responds to medication.
The study tracked the clinical success rates across these different stages and the drop-off. I mean, it isn't a slope. It's stepping off a cliff.
It really is.
For the cats caught early in stage B1, the treatment success rate was 100%.
100%.
And the interventions weren't even heavily medical at that stage, right? They focused entirely on environmental stress reduction, close monitoring, and just dietary adjustments.
That success rate is possible because the hemodynamics, the internal pressures we discussed, haven't been critically compromised yet.
The balloon hasn't popped.
Exactly. You are managing a thick muscle, not a broken plumbing system.
Though we move to stage B2. The internal muscle is significantly thicker, and the left atrium is just beginning to stretch out.
Right, and here vets use pharmacological interventions, actual heart medication.
The success rate in stage B2 was 94.44%. That is still incredibly high.
It is.
You can manage this disease beautifully and give the cat a long life if you know the thickening is there. But then we look at stage C.
Yeah. Stage C is where the invisible disease violently forces its way to the surface.
It's awful.
It's when the cat starts open mouth panting, struggling for air, or hiding under the bed because they are literally suffocating.
And that's usually the moment the owner finally realizes something is horribly wrong and rushes them to the ER.
Exactly. And at stage C, the treatment success rate plummets to an abysmal 16.67%.
An 83.33% failure rate, dropping from a 94% success rate to a 16% success rate simply by waiting for visible symptoms to appear.
It's a devastating reality check.
It really is.
It perfectly illustrates why veterinary cardiologists consider stage B2 to be the golden stage for intervention.
Because you can actually do something.
Right. In stage B2, medications like beta blockers or calcium channel blockers can be introduced. These drugs physically force the heart muscle to relax and slow the heart rate down.
Which buys them time.
Exactly. By slowing the heart rate, you give that stiff ventricle more time in diastole to actually fill with blood, which drastically lowers the pressure backing up into the atrium.
Wow.
Treating preclinical heart disease is the only proven way to prevent the lethal jump to stage C. Once pulmonary edema occurs, fluid drowning the lungs from the inside, you aren't managing a localized heart condition anymore.
You're fighting a systemic failure.
A chaotic losing battle. This is why the authors concluded that echocardiograms are not just an optional extra test. For any high-risk breed, they are a mandatory baseline for survival.
Okay, let's synthesize the massive takeaways from this deep dive into the hidden mechanics of the feline heart. First, we just have to permanently throw away the assumption that heart disease is an old age problem.
Absolutely. Over 80% under 6 years old.
Second, if you are listening to this and you've ever felt that massive wave of relief when your vet takes the stethoscope off your cat's chest and says, "Sounds good," this data should make you pause.
A clear stethoscope does not mean a clear heart.
Right. The classic murmurs only showed up 20% of the time. The much more subtle, harder to catch gallop rhythm was the true red flag.
Yep.
And third, we have to stop relying on standard x-rays to give us the all clear. Because by the time the heart looks visibly enlarged on an x-ray, the cat is already in the terminal stages of heart failure.
It's just too late.
If you own a high-risk breed, or even a mixed breed with unknown genetics and they are under 6 years old, an ultrasound isn't just a fancy add-on. It's quite literally the only way to catch a highly treatable but otherwise entirely silent killer.
This raises a really important question, though, and it's something I want to leave everyone pondering as it builds directly on a very specific, easily overlooked data point from the study.
Oh, the body weight data. I was looking at that, too, and the stratification was fascinating.
It really was. The study noted that 73% of the overall HCM cases were found in cats weighing under 5 kilograms, or about 11 pounds.
Which naturally aligns with the general demographics of the cats in the study.
Right. However, when the researchers specifically isolated the cats weighing over 5 kilograms, the proportion of those heavier cats presenting an advanced stage C deadly congestive heart failure spiked significantly.
Wow. So the heavier cats were much more likely to be found in the terminal drowning stage of the disease rather than the manageable early stages.
Exactly. And the physiological mechanism behind this is called afterload.
Afterload.
Yeah, afterload is the amount of physical resistance or pressure that the heart must overcome to push blood out of the ventricle and into the body's vast network of blood vessels. Imagine having to push open a heavy iron door versus a light wooden one. Excess body weight drastically increases the vascular network and the resistance.
That makes total sense.
It forces a heart that is already struggling with a thickened, stiffened wall to work exponentially harder just to push blood through a larger, heavier body mass.
So the heavier the cat, the heavier that iron door becomes, and the faster the heart exhausts itself trying to push it open.
Precisely. The weight acts as a literal physical accelerator for the disease progression.
That is terrifying.
It takes a genetic structural defect that might have comfortably stayed in a manageable stage B2 for years and rapidly forces it into a fatal stage C by overloading the plumbing system.
And if we think about internet culture right now, there is an absolute obsession with loving chonky indoor cats.
Oh, everywhere.
We view overweight, round cats as cute, happy, and immensely well cared for. They are literally the stars of thousands of viral videos.
They are.
But if excess weight acts as a literal accelerator for a silent genetic heart defect, pushing a manageable condition rapidly into fatal heart failure, I mean, it forces a massive physiological realization.
It really does.
Are we accidentally accelerating a silent killer simply by overfeeding them? If weight is the physical catalyst that tips a genetically flawed heart into congestive failure, maybe our societal definition of a happy, well-fed cat needs a serious and immediate medical reevaluation.
It certainly challenges the biological reality of how we care for them.
That is a heavy, perspective-shifting thought to end on. We've been treating these heart diagnoses like a puzzle where half the pieces are invisible.
Yeah.
But maybe, through our own feeding habits, we are the ones putting extra weights on the pieces, making the puzzle impossible for the animal's body to solve. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the invisible mechanics of the feline heart. We'll see you on the next one.